I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Good morning, good morning. This is Bob Sherwood of WebTalkWithBob@gmail.com. And guess what? Saturday morning, I got up in the morning. It was Memorial Day weekend. And what did I do? I got in my car and I drove 2.5 hours to Abilene, Kansas. Does anybody know what's in Abilene, Kansas, or who came from Abilene, Kansas? Well, Dwight David Eisenhower did. He was Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in World War II. Over 1 million people, soldiers, reported to him. And later he became, of course, President of the United States. One of the most popular phrases ever heard, but repeated often in the 50s and even in the 60s, was, "I like Ike." I remember that. You could get a button with "I like Ike" on it. You could get a banner with "I like Ike" on it. Everybody liked Ike. First, I recommend that if you haven't, you start visiting the presidential museums. Now, I've been to Nixon's, I've been to Reagan's, I've been to Truman's, and now I've been to Eisenhower's. For the most part, they're fascinating parts of history. World War II was an incredible historical event, and many people still think that was the generation to beat all generations. I was a baby at the time of World War II, but my parents lived through it. They lived through rationing of food and buying bonds. People saved money. People bought war bonds to finance the war. That was the most popular thing. I remember even in the late 40s and 50s, if you had a gift you were going to give somebody and you wanted a gift, you gave them a $25 war bond or $25 savings bond that you bought for, I believe, $17.50, and you kept for 10 years. And it was worth $25. Eisenhower was an incredible person, and he managed to assemble a number of great generals around him, of which two of the most popular ones that are known are Montgomery and Patton. And both of those people were totally different than Eisenhower. They were out to kill the enemy one person at a time and attack, attack, attack. And Eisenhower was more thoughtful, as he should be. On the day of the Normandy invasion, there were 1 million soldiers under his command, 5,000 ships, thousands of armored vehicles. And no, there wasn't anybody optimistic that we were going to win the war, that we were going to push the Germans out of Europe. Of course, we believed we could. But if you listen to any of the movies, as I did at the Eisenhower Museum, no one was optimistic, not Eisenhower. He considered what he was doing to be the best effort that he could make, the best efforts that his generals could make. And war is not pretty. And one particular event stood in my mind as I watched the Eisenhower movies. Eisenhower was at the head of a table that was about 3 feet by 10 feet, and eight of his generals, four on each side, sat at the table. He was standing. He was trying to make the decision on whether or not to go on June the 6th or June the 7th. So he goes around the table and asks each of his generals what their forecast was with respect to losses. But when he got to the general who was in charge of the paratroopers, that general said, considering the weather conditions and what we're trying to do, we expect our losses to be greater than 70%. I can't imagine what Eisenhower was thinking at that point. Losses of 70%? Now, later in that same film that I watched, he visited the paratroopers. And as he got out of his car, according to the film, he was aware that 7 out of 10 of those people that he was now going to talk to were going to be dead within 12 hours. That was the forecast. Yet he approached them with smiles, positive, upbeat thoughts. Where are you from? How'd you get here? What do you intend to do? All smiles. Then he got back in his car and drove off. Now the next day, on the 7th, which is the day they actually stormed the beaches, about 2 hours after the paratroopers landed, he got a report on the paratroopers' results. The losses were only 20%. And you could see him think to himself, how could I be happy with 2 out of 10 people dead instead of 7 out of 10? I know 2 out of 10 is better, but if you're one of the parents that were in the 2 that were still lost, you still wouldn't be very happy. The amount of stress and leadership that it must have taken to make those decisions, it just astounds me. When I sit on a chair in the Eisenhower Museum, and I think what must have been going through his head at that time. Of course, I have no idea what was going through his head, but when I think about it, I just can't imagine. But thank heaven he did, because we don't have to speak German in our schools, and we don't have to deal with Nazism. Now, back to one more thing that's probably more current, and that is the Warriors. An incredible basketball team. I watched the last 2 playoff games against Houston, and that third quarter magic was incredible. It makes me think about how motivating it is to watch them play. They're down 15 points, or they're down 17 points, and they're not hitting threes. And then bingo, 3 minutes later, they've hit 4 or 5 3-pointers in a row. Instead of down by 10 or 12, they're up by 5. And then a few minutes later, they're up by 12 or 13. This all happens in a few minutes. But what about this guy, Steve Kerr? What about Steve Kerr, right? He's an outspoken guy. He's obviously well-liked. He says his team has all kinds of firepower, which they do. And when they turn it on, it's rather spectacular. I get that. Here's what Kerr says. This is what got me this morning. I think it's just typical of the NFL, Kerr said. They're just playing to their fan base, basically trying to use the anthem as fake patriotism, nationalism, scaring people. It's idiotic. That's how the NFL has handled their business. Well, first, Mr. Kerr, I have to tell you a few things. You say they're playing to their fan base. And guess who their fan base is? American citizens. So if they make a decision because of the citizens of America, and then more power to them. I call that more than just playing to their fan base, Mr. Kerr. I call that playing to the American citizens of America. I know that was redundant. But here's what Kerr goes on to say. I'm proud to be in a league that understands patriotism in America is about free speech, about peacefully protesting. And he says, and the people that were kneeling, they were protesting police brutality, not disrespecting the flag. I understand that's probably true. But then why do it during the anthem? If you want to kneel, why not just kneel after the game? Why not kneel when nobody's watching on television? Why not kneel at halftime instead of going and getting a drink? Why not kneel between quarters? Why not when you make a touchdown, everybody kneel? That would be a peaceful protest. But when you elect to kneel during the national anthem, one cannot but infer that you're protesting the anthem and the flag. No matter how many times Kerr says they were protesting police brutality, which I imagine they were, if you're going to protest something, you can elect a time to do it that's focused on police brutality and not around a national anthem. I know Kerr has a reputation for being outspoken, and I think in this case he was very outspoken, right? He says they were not disrespecting the flag. They were protesting police brutality. In my mind, they could have kneeled at any other time and protested the same thing without it being police brutality. So, Mr. Kerr, I disagree with you 100%. But I want to say a couple of more things before I leave this issue. We are all about competition. Red versus the blue. Republicans versus Democrats. Warriors versus Houston. We are all about, as Americans, about competition. But sometimes, of course, the competition gets out of hand. We have knee-jerk reactions. Roseanne Barr said something, and bingo, the next event, her show's canceled. Both knee-jerk reactions. Because we're competitive. We want to win. We want our side, our beliefs, our theory, our principles of life to dominate. We don't want the other side to win or even for it to be a zero-sum game. I believe a lot of competition should be zero-sum games where there aren't any winners, there aren't any losers, just participants. But that's not going to happen because Republicans versus the Democrats, that's one of the greatest competitive games going. Now, the problem is in sports, we have rules. And we have referees. If you don't follow the rules, you get punished, you get penalized. But in the game of politics, the Republicans versus the Democrats, the people that get punished for that competition are the citizens. It's people like you and me. People in the heartland of America. Because we're not in the competition, we're on the sidelines. But we're the ones that get punished. We get punished when the Democrats want to do something that's not good for us. And they compete with Republicans on the basis of that's part of the game, as opposed to what's best for Americans. The Democrats are in a position where they have really nothing to say anymore. We all have said it 100 times. I've heard it on TV. You've listened to it on the radio, and I've said it. All they do is they're against stuff. They're against things. They're against Trump. They're for Mueller. And it goes on and on. And that's the competition we have in America. And the only rules we have, the only refs, maybe, we have the courts. But it's naive to think the courts are not partisan. People get up in the morning and they're partisan. They have a set of beliefs. And most of us try to promote those beliefs. I am. I do. For example. But I don't hide behind it. I'm stating quite clearly, I want to promote Heartland of America beliefs. Principles, the Ten Commandments, things that people like Dwight David Eisenhower stood for, and I stand for. That's all for today. Tomorrow, listen in, because I'm going to talk about Roseanne Barr and her cancellation. I know you want to hear what I have to say. It's going to be highly conservative. I just don't know when it's going to stop. Person says something, show canceled. Person says something, advertisement canceled. Morgan Freeman, one of my heroes. One of my heroes, Morgan Freeman. I loved every show he's ever been on. Some woman accuses him of something. Bingo. All the work he had, where his wonderful voice was used, canceled. No due process. No, the person who accused him might be wrong. Just, sorry, you're canceled. Where did it all go? Where did this whole concept of innocent until proven guilty go? Where have we lost that? I was raised like that. I truly believed it. They give people the benefit of the doubt until there's some proof. But it's gone, and I don't know if it's ever going to come back. But I loved it. I think that's the way it should be. It should be innocent until proven guilty. But it's not anymore. That's all for today on this Tuesday after Memorial Day weekend. Bob Sherwood with Web Talk with Bob signing off. Have a good day. Tell me what you think. I may agree or I may not agree. But tell me what you think. But provide some basis for it. Don't give me a non-evidence-based opinion. Bob Sherwood from Heartland of America signing off. Have a good day.